yo, live from Las Vegas, Allegiant Stadium, Marcel Reese, Caleb Plant, you know, my dog, my cohort, Chief, Sweet Life Podcast. Man, thank you guys for joining us today. This is special, man, seriously, special. This is a special environment. The stadium is amazing. I've been here a couple of times to watch two games now. Amazing venue. Yeah. I'm sure, Caleb, you probably be selling this joint out next 2 years or so.
Yeah, it'd be nice to put a boxing match in here.
2 years, man. I was going to wait till later in the show to get to Caleb on that one.
Okay.
Sooner or later, as soon as he's ready to talk about it, we definitely got to get him in the building because, you know, Caleb's one of these guys that you put him in Vegas and we can get 75,000 in here. Screaming for my dog.
Yeah.
Talk to him, Caleb.
So we'll make it happen. We got, you know, something coming up. Something we talked about before. We just got assigned and, you know, got to handle business. And but I'm sure at some point we'll be here.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on what's coming up?
Yeah, you know, I just signed a fight with David Benavidez and for, you know, early next year. And so... just excited about that. It's a big fight for boxing, big fight for the fans, and a big fight for my legacy. So I'm excited about that. And, you know, they'll see.
Coming off such a huge win, I mean, barely a month ago, right? Knockout fashion. Do you feel now that you're finally getting the respect that you deserve, that you warrant in the game?
Yeah, I think it's starting to come around, you know. For a while, people feel like just people weren't really seeing the vision, but I don't really do it so other people will see it. You know, it's something I love, it's something that I see, and as long as I can see it, as long as my team sees it, that's really all that matters. But it is nice for, you know, people starting to come around, they see the skills, they see the, you know, see what I'm able to do, and so it's good.
You see, you used a word that we reference here often, legacy. What do you want the legacy to be? I know where it is right now, but ultimately, what's the trajectory? Like, what's Caleb Plant trying to accomplish, not only within the squared circle, but outside of the squared circle?
Well, first, just, you know, in the ring and with my boxing career, just, you know, we kind of spoke on it before the camera started rolling, just boxing is really like all I ever wanted to do since I was nine. Like, I didn't want to be no astronaut, I didn't want to be no doctor, no school teacher. Like, all I wanted to do was fight and, you know, become legendary, put my name in the good book and make sure it's written in stone so, you know, it can never be erased. And, you know, coming from where I come from, it's a real small town, you know, it's way out in the country. Ashland City is like right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. And there really is no boxing culture. And, you know, for kids, I feel like, you know, it makes it more, you know, real when you can see somebody who looks like you, who's accomplishing those same things. And, you know, I haven't always had that in this generation to be able to look at, you know, people who look like me in the sport and be like, oh, if he did it, I could do it. And, but, you know, some people want something so bad they don't need to see that that has been done before, or been done in this era, you know, for them to know that they can do it. And so just, like I said, put my name in those history books and then outside the box and just, you know, be a good businessman, be smart with my funds. And you know, I'm a family man. I got a daughter who, born, you know, just recently, and my wife, so that's about it.
Oh, speaking of business, Marcel.
Big business
right here. Nah, man, it's really an honor, and I think it's powerful to be able to sit down with, you know, both of you and somebody like yourself who, you know, football player, came from, we're going to talk about Inglewood, and now sitting in the position that you are now, is such an impactful and powerful thing. So, you know, let's dive into a little bit about, you know, coming out of high school, recruitment, the lack of recruitment, Inglewood, and, you know, the playing career and essentially where you have landed now.
I mean, really through, you know, I'm still in the midst of it, right? You know, a lot of people can kind of write the story and act like it's over, but for me, I'm still learning and still grinding. Like, you know, we're still trying to really get it. That's really why, you know, when I found out a few minutes ago that I was on with Caleb, I was like, that's dope, because the story is kind of the same, just in different respects, in different sports, right? It's not really just about reflection and about myself, but it's about the young one from Inglewood or something similar to Inglewood coming up after me, right? And a lot of times, to Kayla's point, what I call it is living proof. It's not just a legend or a poster or a story, but I want to go back to the city and to the hood and let them know, like, we can really get it. Like, we always had people that look like us that played sports and that were athletes, but for me, it was more so about the transition and the longevity and now being still associated with the game, but just in executive form. Now they can see that someone that looks like them, that talked like them, that listened to the same music, that drove on the same streets, that still comes to those streets. Like, we could run the show too. We don't just have to be the product out there. We can also be delivering the product.
Helping develop it.
Yeah, helping develop it, maturing it, nurturing it, and really just calling shots. You know, it's not really a power trip, but it's really just, like I said, it's living proof. It's about motivation.
Do you see yourself, Caleb, at the conclusion of boxing, possibly being a promoter or, you know what I mean, developing as Floyd's done, you know, the money team and things like that, sitting in an Al Haymon position?
Most definitely. You know, right now I actually already have my own promotion company, you know, the LLC of it. Now, you know, the whole business backside of it put together. So, you know, in some of the fights, it's been in conjunction with Sweet Hands Promotions and, you know, the business that I already created. And I'm looking to build that up, you know, to create multiple streams of revenue when I fight. That way I'm not just fighting for a check or a purse, but, you know, like I said, there's also multiple streams of revenue. And like I was saying before, I feel like, you know, the do's and the don'ts, a lot of those have already been laid out before us, and we just got to pick who we're, you know, who we admire, who we like, who we, you know, we like how they went about things and just study their moves, study how they did it, study how they got there. And that's something that I've done, you know, since I was a kid. I feel like I've studied all the greats, from even people like Bill Belichick to, you know, Nipsey Hussle to Floyd Mayweather to, you know, music artists to business moguls. Like, that's something that I've taken the time to study and, you know, try to, you know, put my own twist and my own flavor on it and go about it my own way. So, yeah.
This is,
yeah, that's a dope man.
Yeah, yeah, super dope. This is a question for both you guys. Boxing and football, very calculated, a lot of preparation, you know, so much goes into it, but also too, you have to be able to react on the fly, a lot of adversity. How did you take, you know, in your perspective sports, the adversity portion and the preparation and put that into play into your personal lives, whether that's fatherhood, whether that's business, like dealing with adversity and in situations where you're like, you have to be able to react on the fly?
I'm gonna take this one first, I guess. Honestly, I would actually flip it. Like, it wasn't football that helped me with adversity in my personal life. It was really my personal life that helped me with adversity in football. I'm from the street, so we always knew we had something tough to deal with. Nothing ever came easy. So I knew that it was always about perseverance and resilience. Like, when you coming from the streets, like, you know that you gotta grind and go get it, and that there's gonna be bumps in the roads, and you just gotta keep pushing and go. I knew when I got to the NFL, by the time I was 22 years old, that there was nobody in the world of football that could do anything worse to me than what I already lived through. So that helped me operate under supreme confidence and motivation, because there was nothing that could be done to me that was worse. So I never got too high over something good or positive, and never got too low over a speed bump or adversity.
Yeah, basically, you know, I'd have to agree with him, just to piggyback off that. Just, you know, I'm not sure, you know, for any of the viewers who are watching, if they know my story or know any of the, you know, things that have happened. But, you know, like he said, just the things that I've gone through in life, you know, the trials, the tribulations, stuff like that, that's really what prepared me for, you know, my boxing career. You know, I feel like I've been a fighter my whole life in and out the ring. And, you know, the things that I went through outside of the ring, you know, I've said it in basically the same words that he said before. There's nothing that can happen in the boxing ring worse than, you know, what I've already been through or what I've already conquered or overcome. And so that allows me to operate under supreme confidence, knowing that, you know, there's nothing scary that can happen in this ring that hasn't already happened to me outside. So, you know, it gives me peace of mind. It gives me, you know, like I said, it allows me to relax and be able to, you know, move how I want to move, because I know it's not going to add up to what's happened before.
Share something you've alluded to, some of the struggles that you've had outside of the ring. Can you share something specific that's happened that maybe even during the fight, right as you're in the ring and you might feel like you're down on the scorecards or whatever, but is there something that you like can literally almost channel and be that moment and say, nah, this ain't it, I'm be able to push through this? What is that?
For me, it would be my daughter, Aaliyah. You know, I just had a daughter, Charlie, back in August. But my daughter, Aaliyah, she passed away in 2013. So, and she had a lot of medical issues. You know, 300 seizures a day, brain damage, no motor skill. She couldn't sit up. She couldn't eat on her own. She had to eat through a Mickey tube in her stomach. And she was on life support like 4 or 5 times in an induced coma. And, you know, I'd have to stay at the hospital for weeks at a time sometimes. And, you know, just seeing like, you know, something, a little girl like that go through those type of things, it lets me know like when I'm in training or in a fight, you know, she can go through that. You know, I'm a man, you know what I'm saying? I can keep going. I can push hard on my last mile or on my last background or in the ring. Not that too many of my fights have been that hard, but like, you know, just, you know, knowing if she can go through that, then I can push through and, yeah, and get the job done.
How do you both of you guys stay, you know, you talk about supreme confidence, and I think it's about being centered and balanced and focused, but also too, like, how do you deal mentally? Because I feel like these days, so many kids, adults are struggling with mental health, you know, just the daily rigors of each day. What are some tools that, you know, you do, whether it's meditation or therapy, to help you keep in a balanced, centered place?
I think a lot of days people lack purpose. You know, when you feel like you have purpose on this earth, when you're aligned with what you want to do and what you want to be, and you're doing what you want to do and what you want to be, or working towards that, then you're not really too concerned that if you hit a speed bump, because that's you're trying to get where you're going. You know what I'm saying? You want to get to the NFL. So if, you know, if you get an injury, if you break your ankle, roll your ankle, the only thing you're thinking about is rehab so you can get back on the field as quick as you can. It's not like, oh man, this is the end of my life, you know. But I feel like a lot of days, you know, these days people lack purpose. They're not sure what they want to be. They're not sure what they want to do, or they don't want to. They know what they want to do, but they don't want to work towards it. But if you get on your grind and you figure out what you want, what you love, what gets you up in the morning, and just, you know, you can make $1 million off anything. You know, somebody build a yo-yo, he's a millionaire. So you don't have to pick the right thing. You just got to pick your thing, and just work every day at that. And then when things come along, you're not looking at them, you're looking through them, because you're trying to keep on pushing.
Yeah, and I agree with Caleb, man. It does start with purpose. For me, you know, it all starts with my faith, right? I'm a Christian, so there's always know that everything that I do, I know that there's something bigger than me, right? So I find my purpose in Jesus first, and everything else comes after that, right? And to Caleb's point, people lack purpose, and then they also lack drive.
Discipline,
right? So you have to understand, you know, someone looks at a Caleb Plant. If you're an aspiring boxer, you look at Caleb Plant, you'd be like, I'm going to do what Caleb does. Well, no, you can't do what Caleb is doing now. You have to do what Caleb did then to get to where he is now. So they miss the grind. They see Caleb in his old school, like, oh, I'm going to get an old school just like Caleb. Yeah, I know you. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, like, I've been a fan of Caleb's for a really long time, right? And watched his story and watched him get to where he is, like, silently, right? And move the way he moves. And that's why I respect him so much, because he really got it from the mud, boxing and personally, right? But if you're an aspiring boxer, you can't just see Caleb riding down Las Vegas Boulevard and be like, oh, I want to drop like that. Like, nah, you got to see Caleb
all the work.
10 years ago grinding when everybody else was sleeping, when everybody else was drinking, when everybody else was clubbing. Nah, Caleb was out there running, getting his miles in, right? Shadow boxing when he didn't have any equipment and really getting it. So you have to understand that you have to sacrifice first, and then you start to see the fruits of your labor.
Yeah. And finding purpose, you know, is going to give you vision. And if you don't have the vision, you're not going to know the distance. And I feel like a lot of times when you don't have the vision, when you don't have purpose, you're really just out here wondering, you know what I'm saying, just walking in circles. But once you get that...
I'm sorry, but that was a bar.
Yeah. Once you find that vision, you know the distance, you're going to continue to take the steps necessary, you know, to get to that.
When we start talking about purpose, man, I always say this, no matter what you're doing, you're either doing things on purpose or you're doing things with purpose, right? I can shadow box, but why am I doing it? You don't just go through the motions. Anyone can do something on purpose, but you have to do it with purpose in order to be successful and to have sustainability. That's what it really comes down to.
Yeah, I have a tattoo from a Nipsey verse, find your purpose or you just wasting air. You know what I mean? Identify, I think that's extremely important to identify where you want to be early on and then stay on brand, as we say. You know what I mean? Stay on brand. Stay doing the things that are going to contribute or facilitate you ultimately being where you want to be. And that's not to say that there aren't moments where you're like, you know, we're challenged, whether it's, you know, personal things that happen in our personal life or business, certain things, you know, may move a little differently, I'm sure, in your sport, right? Like, it moves a little different. It's tough when those guys, you know, when they, at the end of training camp, you know, there's only going to be, you know, so many roster spots, right? But how you respond to someone saying, hey, you're not going to make this team, but you can make another team. And then that guy ends up maybe being a Pro Bowler. So, focus and just knowing, like, at the end of the day, this is where I see myself. I see myself out here. I see myself playing out here. You know what I'm saying? You've seen yourself holding up that title, you know what I mean, and being able to take care of your family. So, yeah, we definitely got to always dial in.
Who are your top five boxers of all time?
Eesh. I love these moments.
Me? I have such a huge list of people like I study and love their style. I'm a big fan of Floyd, obviously. Andre Ward, James Toney. Who else? Sugar Ray Leonard. It's hard to pick five, man.
It is. I mean, as many as you want. Yeah. Like,
I got in no order. I got Floyd. I got Andre Ward. I got James Toney. I got Terry Norris.
And, Terry Norris?
I'm going to put me on the list.
Terry Norris?
Terrible Terry.
Yeah, Norris. From San Diego. I remember him and his brother, Orlin Norris. Yeah, I'm a fan of this
the
shit.
The other question, though, if you could fight one person in all the... all the history of boxing, who would you have loved to fight?
James Toney. Yeah.
Why James?
I feel like it would be a good lead up to the fight. A lot of shit talking.
I'm a huge James Toney fan.
Yeah,
he's
one of my goats.
Absolutely.
Who are some of your favorite athletes? Football, basketball, some of your guys?
I'm a combat sport freak.
Yeah, make sure you put my name in there.
I'm a combat sport freak. Yeah. So I've been a huge, huge fan of Caleb and love the way he get down. And Andre Ward, who's a personal friend of mine, and just the way that Dre kind of operated was just, it was always low key, and he was always, it was like his biggest criticism, that he was always low key and he never He just did his thing.
He made it look easy.
He always made it look easy. He made it sound easy. And I'm not as quiet as Dre. Like my trash talk game is supreme. You know what I mean? Like on the field, like I'm quiet up to it, but when I'm on the field and then my switch go on, it's over, right? I did it in a different way, but man, when you talk about athletes, man, there's so many different ways you can go. And I admire a lot of guys, but the guys that I admire are not just the guys who displayed the physical athleticism. It was more so about the total package. When I think about an athlete and the ones that separate themselves, for me, it always comes down to leadership. And it's not just on the team sport, but also the individual. Like Caleb is a huge.
I don't want to cut you off, but
what
you
are
said,
cutting me off.
All right,
though.
But what
well,
you
ahead.
I want to remember.
Your
just
show.
Go ahead.
Your
no,
show.
We're gonna go. No, we're gonna go.
I'm just playing.
Because right now, I think both of you would agree. Like what we're going through in sports, right? With the Kyrie Irving situation, right? And you're talking about leadership. And I'm not saying Kyrie is. I'm making no opinion. But I'm asking you, like, when you see the newer athletes, yeah, how do you feel about sort of some of the choices that they're making?
I think the generation itself in general is just misguided. Everything is a microwave society. Everyone wants to operate on social media. You cannot accurately articulate yourself or a statement in 150 characters. And if you try to, you allow the rest of the world to take away your narrative and run with it however they deem fit. And to me, when I think about leadership, it's not just athletes, music artists. My two favorite artists ever, Tupac, was a fantastic leader and a lot of times articulated himself with too much passion and sometimes a little too emotional for people, which comes off as aggression because of the industry he's in and the way that he looked, right? And the second one was Nip, who was always calm, cool, collected, someone I grew up with on the street, right? And always, but Nip was always calculated and strategic about the way that he operated. That was his personality, naturally. That wasn't Pac's natural personality.
Yeah.
As you can see, I'm tatted on my arm. You know what I'm saying? But it, again, nowadays, when you're sitting here and you're tweeting about it, it's you miss 8 out of 10 times. Because then you have to come back and try and explain yourself a second time. But by then, the narrative's already gone.
Yeah.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
America, we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. To serve others in ways that promote human flourishing and create a ripple effect of transformation for generations to come. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Allowing others to control your narrative. And I think allowing social media and the pressures of being able to react to everything you see puts people always in this bad position because, again, you lose the grasp on, even if you had great intentions. And I think we live in such a reactive, you see something and you automatically want to comment or go on a post or get involved and not understanding the context of it. And I think, you know, I don't think there's a way to fix that because obviously social media is not going anywhere. and people love attention and clickbait and all those moments, but you know, again, like, we have to figure out ways to, I think these kind of dialogues help, you know, like, and that's why we want to create this platform. And it's not just when we have an athlete on or artists on to talk about music and, you know, their perspective sports or whatever, but to talk about like adversity and the pivots and the other things that, you know, everybody goes through, but people are afraid to talk about it because they feel like, oh, we didn't get enough sound bites. You didn't get him saying anything controversial. And that's not what we want to create here. We want to create a space where people can hear these messages and be like, yeah, that's right. How do we implement that into my life? Or how do we implement that into our company? You know what I mean? So I think it's super important for us to be talking about these kind of things.
How do you, what's your take on some of your peers, not just in boxing, but across the sports media?
On social media?
Yeah, just social media and just, I mean, overall stance. I'm not asking you to judge anybody. I'm just saying you're sitting back and you're looking at it. And are there moments where you're saying, damn, homie, I wish you could have done that differently?
Yeah.
Because I know what that's going to bring you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think just keeping an overall focus on the long term, you know, playing the long game. And, you know, what is what I'm about to post, you know, going to somehow bring me some type of negative feedback? You know, at the same time, social media, I call it top comment syndrome. And a lot of people have that these days, where it doesn't matter what you post or how positive it is, you know, somebody's going to try to find a way to be funny and get the most likes on their comment. And it doesn't matter how calculated you are, smart or genuine or honest, you know, there's always going to be, you know, funny dudes out there who try to take it and turn it into something else. So while I feel like you should be calculated and, you know, smart and always keeping a focus on the overall, on the long game, you know, as long as you're being genuine and being smart about what you're doing, I try not to be overly calculated with what I put out, because at the end of the day, no matter what I say, like you said, people are going to try to take it and run off with it. And with that being said, you know, I still, you know, I try to be smart and calculated about the things I post, the things I put out into the world. Not just because of the feedback, but you got to be careful about what you put out, because, you know, sometimes that comes back around.
I also don't think that people should be afraid of what they of what they put out. Yeah. You know, to Caleb's point, it's just it's all about being authentic, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I think that with social media, people start to lose their authenticity to themselves, right? Like, play to your personality. If your personality and you're an introvert, don't try and be so extroverted in your social media posts, because it's not going to come off as genuine, and it's not going to be you. So I that's another thing. It's just you could be whomever you want once when you hide behind the screen.
Yeah, and fans too are gonna gravitate towards consistency. So if on a general basis, like you said, if you're, you know, not as taught, you know, from what he said, he's quiet maybe off the field, but once he gets out there, then he starts. You know what I'm saying? I'm the same way. I talk a lot of shit in boxing, but outside I'm a pretty quiet guy too. But I'm consistent with that. You know, I'm not trying to be somebody I'm not or something I'm not. And I feel like over time, when people recognize that and realize that, you know, people will gravitate towards consistency as opposed to you being all over the place.
See, in Caleb's profession, he probably deal with it more than anybody, like the fake tough guy syndrome, right? All the way leading up to a fight or acting like they want to fight him, and then they back out and don't want to sign the paperwork no matter what the deal looks like, right? You know, so in his profession, it's even more shaky, because they come with it a lot, right? For me, it was just like, okay, you know you're going to have to play me, right? You know you're going to have to play me if you're in my division twice a year. When the schedule come out, we know. But, you know, so Caleb probably has to deal with it worse than any of us.
Yo, I saw I saw the knockout, and I've seen you fight a couple of times, but this seemed to be a little extra something in this, because when you hit him with the shovel thing at the end, I was like, there's something behind the scenes. Something transpired. Like, There was a lot. What? Was there a little? Because that was when you hit him with the shovel. I said, "Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know what was going on."
Not the grave digger, though.
Yeah, because I know I saw you in Canelo. Y'all had obviously y'all had your thing, but this felt like a little more personal. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I think it just from everything, not just from the lead up to the fight through camp, the 8 weeks, but. You know, years previously to that too, you know, just some of the things that Anthony Durrell had said. I hate that I'm even giving him some publicity on this, on the show, but just some of the things that he had said, you know, I'm not gonna get into the vulgar things, but if you go back and you watch the tapes, you know, you'll see calling me a pussy and a bitch and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, he had put on his page the Bernard Hopkins versus Joe Calzaghe thing over a picture of us, which was the I'll never let a white boy beat me. And you know, I don't take kindly to that. You know what I'm saying? I feel like if we're trying to move forward, yeah, exactly, for both of them. And you know, I feel like in 2022 we should be past the you know, well, because of his skin color, he can do this and he can be this and he can accomplish this, you know, because if the shoe was on the other foot, you know, I just feel like it would have been a little bit different. And you know, so I was just burying the beef, you know, between us after that, putting the dirt on him. So yeah, that's not really in my character, you know, but after a fight, you know, I've always dapped it up with whoever was from across from me. And
but it was a lot. It was
enough, you know what I'm saying? So that's not, you know, you get in there, you fight someone, you don't have to like each other after that, but you can respect the other one knowing, hey, he got in here and, you know, he either got the best of me or I got the best of him. You know, anybody who gets the best of me, I got to tip my hat to him because you're going to be world class. But that's not like somebody I could ever really respect or move forward, be cool with, you know, the way he moves, some of the things that he says. So it made no difference to me if people liked it, if they didn't like it. And that's why you want to be calculated what you do, but at some point, you just got to be you, whether people like it or not, and whether people receive it well or not. You know, luckily a lot of people liked it, but there are some people out there who didn't. But, you know, I can't concern myself with what people like or don't like. It was the right move for me, and it's what I felt in the moment. Too. And so that's what I did. And I don't have no apologies for it. I don't take it back. Nothing.
Is that something that's always, you know, because I don't want to give it too much, but We got to be honest about it. Is that something that you've always had to face? Because, you know, a white boxer, just almost like Christian McCaffrey or Shipley at Clemson, like a white running back, there's this stereotype, like, yo, he don't hit the hole like us, or they don't move, you know what I mean? Like,
you know, I've definitely dealt with that a lot, like, my whole life.
Yeah.
And, you know, for him to say that in the lead up and then for me to do what I did and then what I said in my post-press, the post fight, you know, interview in the ring, it was kind of nice for me because it was kind of, I was able to bring attention to it. Like, hey, we don't need to be, you know, telling someone just because of their skin color, you know, how good they can be or what they can do. But throughout my whole life, amateur, you know, at the Olympic camps and Team USA, you know, you hear little remarks like that, or, oh, there ain't no white boys at the top of boxing, or shouldn't you go to MMA? Like, ain't no white world champions, American world champions, stuff like that. So, you know, hopefully by the time I'm retired, like, I can put an end to that stereotype, or at least, you know, shed light on it enough for the next person who's like, hey, I look like Caleb, I come from where he come from, and they can keep on until that stereotype is gone.
That's beautiful.
Do you have a age in mind you want to retire? Have you looked that far, or are you just like going until you can't?
Nah, I'm in my heyday, so that's not even on my mind of retiring. You know, I'm just waking up, working every day, taking the next step and where I want to be, what I want to do. And, you know, that for me and where I'm at, I feel like that would clash with my mentality right now. So that's on the back burner until, you know, when it's time, you know, me and my team, my family, we'll sit down, we'll talk about it.
Do you feel like you retired at the right time?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, listen, there was opportunities to go, you know, a couple years here, 3 years there, something like that. But one thing I always told myself is I was never going to be a journeyman, right? Mm. It's just not in my mentality, right? I did spend 2 years at the end of my career elsewhere, but that was honestly just a personal thing to prove to myself that I was still the best, and I did that, right? But for me, it was all about the Raiders. And once my time here was over, you know, yeah, I was good. You know, because for me, Al Davis changed my life, and then Mark Davis changed my life again. You know, they gave the kid from Inglewood an opportunity when nobody else wanted to, and he believed in me at times more than I believed in myself. And for me, for a man to do that and look me in my eyes and say the things that he said, and for us to share the times that we shared, speaking about Al, it changed my life. And then his son, Mark, did the same thing again, now making me, you know, one of the youngest high-level executives in the NFL in sports, period. Changed my life again, you know, and giving me the confidence to be able to walk into any boardroom I want to, again, under supreme confidence, the same confidence I played with. And the same trash talk I play with.
I love that story because right now I feel like we are in a very divisive space. So for you to point out that Mark and Al extended their hand to you, we're going to mentor you, we're going to pull you up here. They didn't have to.
Carol Davis, too. I can't leave moms out, man.
Yeah, you know, but I'm just saying.
First lady of the Raider Nation. Don't let you forget that, man. She the most vital piece of the Raider Nation. Moms, I love you. You know what I'm saying? She different. She's stronger than all of us. But I want to make sure I answer your question and address your question about whether I retired at the right time, right? Because you never really know when it's the right time to call it quits. One thing I tell kids, one thing I tell young athletes now, even in the league, I tell them, if you put everything you have into what you do, if you respect the game and the sport that we have, no matter when you're done, whether it's in 10th grade, whether it's a 20-year professional career, you will be at peace. Don't cheat the game. Respect it, respect who came before it, respect who's participating in it with you and your peers, and respect yourself in it, and you will be at peace whenever it's done. I think that's always going to be the key.
One of the clearest things I hear just with everybody here is the importance of advocacy, right? Al Davis, you're talking about a mountain of a man, a trailblazer, a true pioneer, his son, his wife, wrapping their arms around you, kid from Inglewood. That's advocacy at the highest form. How do you take that and you pour that back into your community, your kids, other people around you, and how important is that?
I mean, it's extremely important. It's really why we do it when we talk about legacy, right? You know, Caleb and I are sitting here now as individuals, but I'm sure that he shares the same sentiment that there's 100 people who were behind us and in front of us who helped us to where we are right now. You know, Al's no longer here with us. Mark is with me every day in the office or here in the stadium, but, you know, leaving out like my mom and my granny and my uncles, but my wife and kids, you know what I'm saying? They do it now. My wife holds down everything while I'm constantly grinding. I wouldn't be able to grind like this if I didn't know my kids had the greatest mother in the world to take care of them, to provide for them, to teach them. Like, I wouldn't be at peace doing what I do now if I didn't know in my mind that I had the greatest wife being the greatest mom while we're doing this interview right now. You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, no matter how much success we have, like, and operating under supreme confidence, we don't do it alone. Like, everyone says, oh, you're an executive. You know, there's, you know, 300 employees at the Raiders office who do a ton of work. And, you know, they're sort of the gatekeepers of what we do. So you're never alone. So to answer your question, it's the most important thing to pour in to everyone who's around you. It's all about positivity.
Your biggest advocate, probably, that we know about, your father.
And
right?
My wife, yeah.
Yep.
My father and my wife, yeah.
Yeah.
And Al Heyman as well. You know, when I had Aaliyah and I had a couple people looking at me and wanting to sign me, you know, I had done well in the amateurs. I won the Golden Glove Nationals and became Olympic alternate in 2012. And I had a couple of people wanting to sign me, but then once I had my daughter with all the health issues that she had, I felt like it scared off a lot of potential people who wanted to work with me, because it's already hard enough to get to the top in any sport, much less boxing. And then to have, a disabled child on top of that, I think it scared them away. And but in that moment, Al Haymon and Luis de Cubas, those were like the only people who would get back to me and keep, still had interest in me, even after everyone else had just kind of like quit believing in me. And so for them to still believe in me in that moment, I needed to turn pro, I had this daughter, I need to start making money and all this stuff. For them to still believe in me in that moment and sign me, and now we've been able to do everything we've done, it meant a lot for Al and Luis to keep that faith in me. And then also, speaking on my dad, coming from where I come from out in the country, like, and I said there's no boxing, really no boxing culture there, people saying, oh, you need a plan B, but for my father to keep that faith in me and like, no, he's gonna make it, that meant a lot, for him to keep, believing in me, and I'm sure I wouldn't be here without him. And my grandfather too, helping support my amateur career with my dad, helped funding my way to get around, for them too to do those things, it means a lot. And then give my wife some credit as well, obviously, she's been nothing but supportive since, we first linked up. And I moved out here, I had no car. I wake up in the morning, drive her to work, take the car to the gym. She'd Uber over and train me because my coaches weren't out here in Vegas yet. She'd train me, Uber back after, she would do that on her lunch break, Uber back to work, then I'd finish up my workout, go pick her up, go home. We would do that every day, picking me up on my runs, making sure I'm breakfast, lunch, dinner, fed, and just everything with the baby now. And I mean, there's no way I could have got to this point without her doing everything she did. I mean, she's been 110% full support of everything that's ever had to get done. And so shout out to JP.
Shout out to wifey.
Cuz got the whips now, though.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of whips, downtime. I know you love cars and fashion. So what are some of your, favorite cars you have, or some you got your eyes on? How do you spend your downtime and some of these whips?
I got my own a lot of cars, but I don't have no more garage space, so.
You can leave a couple in my crib.
Yeah. But I got a 1964 Impala Super Sport. It's like a forest green and seafoam green. It's fixed up nice. And then I got a 1972 Chevelle Super Sport, fixed up real nice. And so in my downtime, I like to cruise the strip in the Impala, or hit donuts in the Chevelle, you know what I'm saying? I'm into fashion, into sneakers, stuff like that. I don't do too much besides just train and go home, but I like to cruise around.
Oh, what about fashion. You? How you spending them checks, man?
When I was playing, me and my close friends, me and the homies, we would drive our old schools to the game every Sunday. Sunday go to meeting cars, you know what I'm saying? So for me, it's all about my 6'4 Impala, right? It's, Raider helmet, silver, and blacked out interior, silver and black, that's it. For me, Raider dice in the windows. Like, I'm an old school Inglewood cat, you know what I'm saying? Like, this just switches and everything, but for me, I actually get some work in it. When I see Kalo 6'4, it inspires me to do some work and get it up to par, but that's what it is for me. And I've been a sneakerhead my whole life. We didn't grow up with money, so we used to sit there with them East Bay magazines and circle which ones we wanted, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Sitting there in the front yard, just circle which ones we wanted. So once I became a Nike athlete or anything, I just went crazy. It's a problem in my household. It's the biggest issue in my household right now is my kicks, but.
Oh, same.
But,
get these out of here. Tripping over them, falling over them.
It is what it is. You know what I mean?
I don't have any other vices. I don't, you know what I mean? It's just the shoes.
Shout out John Marshall family at Shoe Palace.
Yeah.
Shout out. Keeping us all laced.
Man.
But,
thank you, John.
John, Dooley.
Yeah.
Homies. And again, man, just want to say we appreciate your time, your advocacy. For us, we don't take these things lightly. We know, how busy you guys are in your everyday lives. And to be able to sit here with us and just advocate for what we're doing. You know, it means the world to us, man. And we're excited to, you know, continue to watch you guys, like you said, as continue to grow, fight. You know, congratulations on being a new father, man. And we'll do this again.
Hopefully very soon.
Yeah.
Yo, I'm looking forward to the fight. I'm gonna tell you right now. Like I told him, I'm a huge fight fan. That's gonna be serious.
Go.
I'm looking forward to you handling your business.
No fire stake though, man. Make sure you chip in, man.
Where
put
the
75-99 in there.
Where y'all fighting at?
I don't know yet. You know, we don't have the details.
You don't have a
figured out.
You know,
all the details figured out. But you know, might be out here. We'll see.
We pulling up.
I heard Caleb say, no fire stick.
No
get
fire.
Your pay-per-view on.
You know what I'm saying? You know, I picked it up at my end of the couch, bring great fights to the fans. You know, that's what the fans want. So hopefully the fans can, you know, lift their end of the couch and, you know, make it worth it for the fighters.
Man, we don't have a lot of executives, young executives of your caliber and still going. Please keep going. And man, I'm a fan of you. I'm a fan of what you do. Cause like, again, like you said, got it out the mud. Like, and you just keep going. You just keep going. And you feel like you're one of us, like really one of us, especially being from the city, you know, from Long Beach, but you know. You know what it is. Stop.
Long Beach ain't real L.A.
Oh.
Uncle Snoop, I love you, but you know,
you
know what it is.
Now we having that Atlanta argument. This ain't real Atlanta. Okay.
I don't know about Atlanta, but you know, 310-323, you know what it is.
562.
A service spoon,
yeah. No, but in all seriousness, no, appreciate y'all. Like, what you're doing is also special. You know, even from looking at your crew and understanding that everybody plays a part in really just tapping into the community, you know what I'm saying? And to the culture and what we're trying to do. Because we all have similar backgrounds, maybe in different places and different cities and different states even. But, you know, it's all about progress and getting there and coming together and everybody being great. Like helping each other out, right? I just think that's what this generation is missing right now. And we're doing a lot of things, even on our side, the Raider side, to try and help. You know, we got a nonprofit leadership academy that we're building, a vision of Mark Davis, and we're building an actual structure right on Raiders Way in Henderson, where we're going to be able to bring people that look and come from places like us, like ours, and bring them together and really tap into their leadership abilities and help them showcase that. Because leadership looks different than what America or the world is trying to make us believe leadership looks like. There's different ways to lead. It's not always about talking. It's not always about, you know, putting yourself up on this pedestal. It's all about what you have inside of you and help people bring it out. And the Al Davis Eddie Robinson Leadership Academy is all about helping, you know, underserved communities, women and women-owned businesses, you know, be put on a platform and a pedestal to be able to showcase their abilities.
For sure. And yeah, I just want to thank you guys for having us. And, you know, this hopefully we can lay some blueprints for people who are going to watch this on how they can get to their next step. And, you know, you mentioned that, you know, it's a divisive time, but there are a lot of divided people, but there are also a lot of us who aren't divided. You know, we're, like you said, we're from different places and different states, and, you know, we all look different, but we're obviously in full support of what everyone has going on. And I feel like once you get on that road and once you find your purpose and you're working towards that, you're not going to have time to be divided with everyone else around you. You're going to be reaching out to people like us, and, you know, trying to be in full support of that and help the next person, you know, get on their way and get to where they're headed. I feel like it's more so the people divided who are, you know, walking in circles and don't have that purpose. Because once you get on that, you know, you don't have time for shit like that. So, you know, I'm in full support of everything y'all got going on. I appreciate y'all having me. Thank you.
Find your purpose.
Yeah.
Find your purpose. A Sweet Life, Allegiant Stadium, Caleb Plant, Marcel Reese, Malik Rashid. See y'all next time. Peace.